Okay, thank you very much, Cahill. You can hear me, I'm assuming. Yes, great. Okay, thank you. It was very nice to see the Coventry City Football Club scarf. I did spend 20 years in Coventry, of our now in Birmingham, but if I looked to any football team, I looked to Coventry. And I saw hundreds of completely hopeless games. There you go. So I'm going to read 11 poems. I'll give a very short introduction to each one of them. Most of them are about my family, I'm afraid to say, who you'll get to know over the next 19 and a half minutes. So the first couple of poems are about my mum, who is very old and short of memory, I think it's fair to say. And this little poem is about her remembering things from her past, of course. She grew up near Liverpool during the Second World War, and she particularly remembers seeing the city in the distance burning during the Blitz. And I mentioned some waterfalls in a little North Welsh town called Llangollen, which was a place lots of Liverpudlians used to go and visit when they had some free time. So the poem is called Clouding Over. Clouding over, she forgets the face, then a date, then the day of the week. She calls her daughter the name of a cat she had as a girl. The lightning striking momentarily illuminates her life. The night she woke to see the city burn. That time they told her she was adopted. The thunder reminds her of the bakery she worked in. She remembers the falls at Llangollen, the river in full spate, the rowing boat capsized. We all got wet. The clouds are beautiful. It starts to rain. And my second poem about my mum is also about myself. When I was very young, she bought a book of poems by a writer called Walter de la Mare, Poems for Children. And I know this because many, many years later, I found the book, a very old book. And the page, which I loved most, had been sellotaped over. It was very worn and dirty. And it was a poem called Won't. And the poem was about a little boy who refused to do what his mother told him to do. And I read this poem to my mum 3 or 4 years ago. So she would have been 85, 86. And suddenly, in the moment of me reading her the poem, she remembered that she'd read it to me when I was 2 or 3 years old and when she was a young woman. And she gave me the middle line, the last line of the first stanza of this poem. So you'll hear that line and I'll pause just after. And that was the line she gave to me. And having given me that line, I felt I had to write this poem. So it's a poem about me remembering having had her read this poem to me 50 odd years ago. And it's called Won't. Mum reads me Won't by Walter de la Mare, as she used to when we were first mother and son. It's the same house, the same air, the same words, but in her head, another woman holds her little boy. She tells me, I read this to you when I was your mother. Her voice distorts. She doesn't cry. A bee taps at the window twice, then drifts away. But you're still reading it, I say, and we are still mother and son. Oh, will you stay for your tea? She asks, as she always does. I won't. No, sorry. I have to get away. And now I have two poems about my father, because I'm very democratic like that. So my dad was, like many working class men, a keen cyclist. He grew up in Liverpool, and when the war was over, he went cycling all over the country. But he was not a good map reader. I think that is fair to say. And as children, me and my sister would go on all sorts of walks and cycle rides with him and end up in places where we didn't want to be. So in this little poem, all the examples of very poor map reading are absolutely genuine, and I have been involved in them. But also, this is about an experience where I found myself cycling in North Wales. I am my father's son, and navigated myself into a river. The poem is called The Back Roads. The back roads. And he would take the back roads, but often led to ploughed fields, barbed wire, farmers with shotguns, and once to a wooden bridge over a river with a sign saying, "Condemned." We crossed. Of course. That was my dad. Where is he now? I swore I wouldn't take the back roads, but here I am, lifting my bike over a stile, wading a ford, crossing a rifle range. Here I am on the back roads, and that figure ahead, vaulting a five-bar gate, as one shouldn't, it is my father. And the second poem about my father, who died 3 years ago, is, yes, a rather upsetting one in a way, because in his last few years, he became tired and disorientated, even in his hometown where he'd lived for 50 years. And on one occasion, the police had to bring him back in a police car because he'd gone out for a walk and got completely lost. And that was really the last time he ever went out on his own. So this poem is not absolutely accurate to what really happened, but it's imagining how he gradually lost connection with his town and his people and his countryside, the place he'd adopted for much of his adult life. And it's called Father. Father. I walked with my invisible father out into the fields on the edge of town. But they are gone now. New roads, new names, new people. Dad, stay here for a while, I said, and I'll go and find out what has happened to our lives. He sat on the newly installed bench. And when I returned, furnished with stories of change, I found him utterly dead, his cold eyes on the cold world closed. So many years he had lived here, and then this. His roads renamed, his fields built over, his people now coming into view as strangers. So I'm going to go back a generation to my dad's father, my grandfather, who was called Frederick Arthur Davidson. He was Liverpudlian. He went away to sea when he was 14. He joined the Merchant Navy. I think he spent some of the First World War in the Merchant Navy. He was also a very traditional man in many respects. He was a traditional member of the Communist Party of Great Britain, which obviously many people in Liverpool were. And this poem is about his relationship with the Communist Party and his relationship with being a sailor. And it's for my aunt, his daughter, my father's sister. Frederick Arthur Davidson, for Rita Walker. I think of my Merchant Navy grandfather boarding a vessel bound for the far north, even to the end, a neat and abstemious man, perfectly turned out, a dab hand at sewing. He served me baked beans with curry powder like they did at sea. He wanted revolution. That he was, on balance, wrong about how the world would sail itself is, on balance, irrelevant. He stood still on one of the decks as the ship cut its way through a choppy swell, and he moved with the mass of steel and water, a man at ease with the mass of steel and water. He was a lovely man, certainly to me, but he was also a tough man. So the book that Cahill mentioned, which is published shortly, is called A Commonplace and includes many of my poems, but also 12 poems by other poets. And it also includes a commentary running through the book, me talking about why I like these poems and why I've included them. And the bit I would have written about this poem had we been in lockdown is to say that this next poem is a bit like a lockdown poem in that it's about two people being physically distanced, but through the magic of the airwaves being brought together momentarily as they hear a piece of music. I'm told that Philip Larkin, the little known English poet, wrote a poem on a similar subject, but I'm also told that his is not as good as mine. Anyway, we'll see. So this is called Live Broadcast. Too late to go out and nowhere to go anyway. I content myself with this celestial but disconcerting music A Brandenburg by J.S. Bach, which they enjoy in London very much. Your message says you're sitting down to listen to it too, or busying yourself with things that must be done, or watching as the last high clouds grow dark. Although we are alone, the gods of digital transmission have ensured the sound they give to me, they give to you. Now all that is between us is the music. It breaks into the orbit of our hearts. No, honestly, that's what I think, and holds us each to two trajectories fixed by the pull of time and place until the final notes have died away and grand applause releases us back to ourselves. So I grew up in a small working class town in North Berkshire. Don't let the accent confuse you. In the south of England, there are working class towns in the south of England. And one of my first jobs when I left school with my solitary A-level was to be an apple picker and to work as an odd job boy in a garden in a village a few miles from my town. So this little poem is about the woman who owned the garden, who was 70 or 80 when I knew her. The poem's not entirely factually true, but it's true to the spirit of finding myself climbing trees and picking apples. It's called Miss Balcombe's Orchard. I came from the shed where we sorted the apples, not splitting the day, but moving through it. And I carried a spade or a fork and a hoe. She was gone down to the top orchard, all her 70 years on the Diddy tractor with the dog snapping at grasses. A vapour of petrol settled on the morning. Slicing the friable soil, the spade made the sound of steel on flint, and the frozen loam fractured, sheared at my feet and at my weight, and I was delving as I had been instructed. Only I did not know she was dead then. Propped on the tractor, her leather gauntlets gripping the knurled steering wheel, the motor idling, and her mouth was open to release the ghost of the spark on steel, on flint, but had moved through her, and her unfashionable trees were a lost garden. I've just got a few more poems to go. I hope I'm not taking too much time. So this next one is also about apple picking, set at exactly the same time, more than 35 years ago. And as I recollect, most of it is true. Apple picking. It's autumn, and I'm working at picking the last of the small apples. They've grown without check. They glitter in the slight breeze. It takes a young man and a tapered ladder and some nerve to reach them. In the big wooden shed, the women of the village and one old man are grading my catch. I'm the last picker sent to finish off because I'm recently fallen in love and I'm incapable of doing much else other than swaying in treetops. So now I'm nudging the ladder into the branches and taking two rungs at a time, holding a basket. I lever, pivot, lean and stretch out to twist the apples from their sprues. I listen for the soft, sharp snap of stem parting company. What I pick, I set down as gently as I can. Apples bruise beneath the skin, unnoticed until days later they bloom into decay. And damaged apples are discarded. The women of the village see to that. Working, I think of the young woman I've fallen in love with, how we found the pale scars on her body when we undressed each other. An accident as a child, scalding water, nothing more. I had put my face to her damaged skin and drawn in her rain-washed smell, not realizing how this must have hurt or how much love it took to let me see her. And I did not wish that she was different. I wished that I was. And I think I have, just two more poems to go. So this is, needs no explanation, really. It's a poem written about a small valley in North Wales. I like North Wales, as you will have gathered. It's called Just Off the A5, West of Llangollen. to swing the gate shut and latch it, and to begin to walk up the track along the coombe is almost like love. The stream tilts past you, clattering the silent air heavy with the crash and song of tumbling water. The mud gives way to bare rock, splintered by seismic pressure pushed from below. The life that you have lived, the lies told. The cottage stands ready. Slow, heavy slate takes your weight, a small desk, an old chair, outside, leaves and hills. And in the frail, unleavened moment, you are pulled back into yourself. Before the fall, the boy lost alone. And now my final poem. I have in the book some poems of politics and contemporary politics, but this is the only one I'm reading for you tonight. It's a rather dark poem. As you'll know, my little country has committed an act of self-harm, and plenty of us will suffer, and I'm afraid other countries will suffer too. This madness may last a generation, but we'll be back. Meanwhile, here's a poem about having your papers checked at the border, something I'm going to have to get used to. Borders. They are bringing back the borders. So a night train winds to a dead halt, and in the blazing darkness of suspicion, uniformed men just doing a job thump through doors and fill the corridors with orders and mistrust. They are looking for the others, not you. But still, your eyes look to your shoes in need of spit and polish. You hope they do not stop. They stop. You hear the hum of electricity. Voices demand papers. And it begins. Thank you very much.